available within the first hour of your arrival in any new city. Fall well on knees and hands in public. Make sure you are seen. Bleeding is optional. If someone immediately lifts you without pausing his cell phone conversation, you will know that this is a place worth staying in. Limp to the nearest park, sit and watch locals by a fountain, dozing, kissing, walking dogs. Do not rush. If you have fallen properly, there will be no need to fall here again. Your knees' sweet sting and bruise will remind you of attention, the necessity for kindness. Thank you. I thought I'd start with that one since I travelled here yesterday, and it's just such a delight to be here. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me. It's wonderful. I'm not a stranger to Cork. I come here quite a lot. My dad lives in Clonakilty, and he's here tonight, so it's such a treat to read for him as well as for you. Well, that's nice. He's definitely over there. And I come to Cork quite a lot for the Short Story Festival and the Poetry Festival because it's a fabulous place. That poem was actually based on something that happened to me when I was in Mexico. It's a long way to Mexico, and I just got there and I was completely jet lagged and I went out for a walk. And right by the traffic lights, I just tripped and fell flat on my face. And this guy bent down, he was talking on his phone, he didn't stop talking on his phone, he bent down, picked me up, and then just kept on walking. And I thought, it's very embarrassing when you fall over in public. You just kind of want to cry. But I limped to the park and I thought, I'm going to get a poem out of this. Which is how life works, right?
Yeah.
For the writer, exactly. So I thought I'm going to read to you from various things tonight. And Cork is a very special place for me as well because it was where my poetry pamphlet was published 3 years ago by Southword. So I thought I'd read you a few poems from that as well. And this is a poem about fathers, but not about my father, about someone else's father. And what we know about time. When it failed to alarm, my father took the clock apart, laid it all out on the kitchen table. While the dog dreamed and snored, we watched him clean every piece, then, with breaths held, attempt reassembly. It worked perfectly for the next 10 years, which was odd, given the 16 horological components my father couldn't fit back in. They lived out the rest of their lives in that kitchen drawer designated for such things. There must have been someone, somewhere, now, like my father, like the dog, the kitchen table and that drawer, long gone, who once knew exactly what those 16 parts were for. So that was a story that I stole, that I heard someone else tell about their father. And I thought, I like that. And the fact that he could remember so many years later that it was 16 pieces, which seems crazy, actually, that the clock would work without those 16 pieces. So I stole that. And I started out as a fiction writer. I was writing short stories long before I came to poetry. I was fairly terrified of poetry, frankly. So quite a few of my poems are also fictions. Amazingly, a whole lot about ephemeral elephants. It's just such a coincidence. Sadly, no. Only one now that I just wrote. So this is not entirely autobiographical. Dreams of a tea seller. I sell you teas. Lapsang Souchong and Darjeeling. Oolong and Lady Grey. But I want to be a builder. I want to mix cement, fuck the scent of bergamot, the steeping and the straining. I want to lay foundations for the tallest buildings and the smallest houses. I want to wear builder's trousers and a hard hat. I want not to be fat and sat amongst the kettles, but sleek on building sites with the foreman and his crew, muscled and unbowing to any customer. I want to swing from a girder, dropping my teapots one by one while drinking builder's brew, too milky and too sweet for you. And I'll do one more from here. So, as well as often making things up, and I don't actually want to be a builder and I've never sold teams, but you never know. I often also use science as inspiration, and I found it extremely, it's an extremely rich source. I don't know how many of you ever read New Scientist magazine, but I highly recommend it because it's full of completely wacky phrases. There's always someone in the audience who's like nodding, is there? Do we have any scientists? Yes! Excellent, fantastic. Don't hold me to anything in terms of fact, because I just feel free to sort of run with it. But this was inspired by an article from New Scientist. Honey, bears who when awake are not become diabetic, it seems, as they hibernate. Scientists think this is what allows them to devour their stores of fat during those long winter sleeps. Do they dream of test tubes and reagents? Is there, on the tongue of every sleeping bear, the faintest hint, growing day by day, of sweetness? So, carrying on with the science theme, this one was inspired by, how many of you have heard about the fire ants? I don't know, that there was there were flooding in America, I think, last summer, so you might have seen pictures of what these ants do when these kinds of things happen. And I read an amazing article about an American science article about someone who was desperately trying to kill the fire ants. And they're fairly unkillable. And so they're sort of seen as a pest. But I was thinking, what they do is actually pretty admirable. So this is called, What Do We Do When the Water Rises? Fire ants, when flooded, make of themselves a raft, hooking bodies. When stranded, make of themselves a bridge. And when a colony is tipped into a bucket, sphere. Scientists have tried to persuade them to disband, pushing the ant architectures further and further down into the water. But where a single ant will sink, together they cling on. How do they know how hard to hold and when to let each other go? So as well as making things up and taking things from science, poetry, my fiction is very fictional and quite strange, and I'm going to end with a few very short stories, but poetry seems to have allowed me to write about things that have happened to me directly in my life in a way that I'd never been able to or felt comfortable with before. So there was the falling over in Mexico, and then there's this one. We've had the father poem, so this is a mother poem. Body. I saw my mother's heart today. She pressed up against the machine while I stood a few feet away and watched it load on the computer screen. Is that, I asked, the radiologist, immune to the novelty of inside views, nodded. I'd helped my mother get undressed, seen for the first time the vest she wore to cover where her breasts had been. I had not expected several moments later to see her chest, like wings unfurling, open itself out to me. Released, my mother stood small and grinning in her backless gown, not knowing what I'd seen, what she'd shown. I kept it to myself, my mother's heart. It had not looked as I'd imagined, but like a star shooting through her chest, that body I used to be a part of. Thank you. I thought as well, before I finish with two shortish stories, I'd read you something new, which I hadn't thought of before I left Manchester, which is where I'm living, so I've written it out by hand. But it's a poem that I wrote when I was in Dublin a few years ago, and it's going to be published in the Rialto in a few weeks. So, thank you. That's just exactly the right reaction. This is called Grip. On a Dublin street, I pass a man who makes as if to shield his heart from me. But I am not a threat in that department. Theft, of breath or vital organs has never been my plan. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something precious, not blood or meat or muscle, in his inside jacket pocket he is trying to protect. You walked so quickly, I didn't see your face. Might have recognized one who also slips out in the world. Hold on. Thank you. So I thought I'd finish with some fictions. The book, the poetry book, Terms and Conditions, and this one, these are bioluminescent jellyfish, I just want to tell you, which is pretty damn fantastic. So that's what the glow in the Some of Us Glow More Than Others refers to. Many of these stories are written when I was writer in residence in a biochemistry lab, which is a wild place to just go and hang out, spend time with scientists, not all of whom want you watching everything they're doing, but it was fantastic, and I highly recommend any of you being writers, we can get access to, and scientists always seem amazed that anybody wants to go and find out what it is they do on a daily basis. Says the scientist, see, you have some here, so you could go and accost them later, it's all my fault. I want to say first, as a proviso, this is all fiction and not based on any living scientist. This book came out a couple of years ago, and it was weird for me that this and the poetry book came out at the same time, because I'm never really sure where the boundaries are between the poems and the short stories, and generally leave that to other people. So this is a tiny piece of flash fiction, also inspired by a New Scientist article. It's a piece of advice, just like advice from the traveller. If kissed by a dragonfish. If kissed by a dragonfish, do not bite. If kissed by a dragonfish, make sure you are sitting. If kissed by a dragonfish, let it sway you. Do not worry about a scale or two you may have to pick out from between your teeth. Do not worry during the kiss, before the kiss, or after. The dragonfish's skin is armored, but its heart beats loud and soft. You will not forget the kiss. You will not forget the coolness of the dragonfish's breath inside your lungs. You will look down through the floor of glass and see nothing swimming. You will part like an ocean, and on your seabed, you will purr. Thank you. And I'll finish with the final story in the book, which is one that I wrote for Radio 4 a couple of years ago. It's three short stories all inspired by the biochemistry lab. And there is a part for audience participation if you do feel so moved. You've already, so many of you have entertained me tonight, so don't feel you have to, but you'll know it when it comes. The party. We get to the party. We say hello to our hosts. We take off our coats. The party is crowded. We fight our way through to the kitchen. We load our plates with food. We sit in a corner. There are a lot of people. There are mathematicians and physicists, experimentalists and theoreticians. There is an elderly but still lively Nobel Prize winner. We are not mathematicians. We are not physicists. When someone asks what we do, we swallow our food and we say, biochemists. Mm-hmm. They are polite. They nod, but they change the subject. They talk about a film they have seen or about the decor of the kitchen. We nod, we talk politely too, even though we have not seen that film. At a certain point, there is music, quite loud, from the other room. We place our plates on the side and move into the hallway. We see people dancing, mathematicians, physicists, theoreticians and experimentalists, and the elderly, but still lively, Nobel Prize winner. We look at each other. And then we sneak up the stairs. We find the room where the coats are kept, and we sit on the bed. We hold hands. We hear someone coming up the stairs. We wonder about hiding, but it is too late. She comes into the room. Here they are, she calls to someone behind her. Come, she says to us, come. And she takes our hands, pulls us up from the bed. We look at each other. We do not understand, but she gives us no choice. Here they are, she cries as she leads us back down the stairs. I have them, she says, as she pushes us gently into the other room where the music is loud, where everyone is dancing. Someone turns down the music and everyone is looking at us, swaying, smiling. They open up a space and there we are in the middle of the room, surrounded by everyone, smiling, swaying. We look at each other. We grip hands. We do not understand. The woman who has brought us down here, who took us from the coach room and brought us, says, will you please, please give us some of your words, your biochemistry words. And the others, the mathematicians and the physicists, the experimentalists and the theoreticians, the elderly Nobel Prize winner, they are all nodding, saying, yes, yes, give us your words, your words. We are shy. We are holding hands in the middle, the music still playing, everyone swaying. We look at each other. We wait. Is this real, we think? Do they really want this? And then we do it. We begin, we say, DNA. DNA, they all say, DNA, DNA. Then we say, lymphocyte. Ooh, they say, and they repeat the word, lymphocyte, they say, turning to one another, still swaying, lymphocyte. Organelle, we say. And then, lamellipodia. Lamellipodia, they cry, and someone raises up her arms. The woman who brought us here, who took us from the coat room, claps her hands. Lamellipodia, she cries. We look at each other. We smile a little. We loosen our handhold. Then we say, green fluorescent protein.
Nice.
Oh my, says the elderly Nobel Prize winner. And he does a twirl and then says, green fluorescent protein. The words ripple round the room until everyone is whispering them, chanting them, green fluorescent protein, green fluorescent protein. And the chant becomes louder and louder. Someone turns the music up and then everyone is dancing. We stand in the middle of the sea of dancing mathematicians and physicists, experimentalists and theoreticians and the twirling elderly Nobel Prize winner, listening as they murmur green fluorescent protein as they sway and dip. We stand and we smile and smile. We feel wanted. We feel loved. We feel heard.
No.
Thank you.